You can't appreciate it because I didn't style it, but I just got a haircut. And I don't want this in the pod, but it was an expense. Like, I've never gotten like an expensive haircut before. This was like,
It looks good.
it's, I mean, the thing is, like, when I style it and when you see, like, he did like the really nice edges with the razor in that,
Yeah.
it's,
By the way, it's almost impossible for me not to put this in the podcast, so we'll see.
and
But
it will
now,
be very possible for me to just cut. This is
just cut it. That is
great.
terrible.
Oh, man.
That is terrible.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
Terrible. But to what you were saying, whether or not this gets included, there was a Boy Meets World episode, which why not bring up Boy Meets
This is
World?
like the second week in a row you've talked about Boy Meets World episode.
Well, I'm sorry. Joey the Rat was the fucking guitarist in the last band.
Are you okay? Are
I
you
am okay. But no, there was an episode where he was like, no, I get a haircut. Then 2 weeks later, it looks good. And then it's time to get a haircut and restart the whole process. That's me.
I just hate the idea of getting a haircut like once a month feels like too much. Like I want it to last like 2 months, three if I can. This was like a 3 month growth,
Can I
I
just say,
think.
I mean, I've always liked your disheveled look. It just looks like your disheveled look.
Well, man, I wish I could style it. I thought about styling it for you, but I was like, that's too needy. That's too like, I wanted you to say something. And then I just said it, I guess.
You know how I style my hair?
I've seen you get ready a lot. I've actually seen you get ready more than anyone outside of my wife or my immediate family, because I was the one waking you up for a good portion of our teenage to 20-year-old years.
I'm gonna start. I'm
Well,
gonna welcome.
no.
No, fuck it. Here we are. Well, welcome everybody.
Welcome.
I am going to. I'm gonna need you to send me just like a voice memo of you going, Rob, hey buddy, get up. Come on, buddy. It's time for work. And I'll use that as my alarm clock for now.
Except we both know that's not how I did it. I was like, Rob.
Seriously.
Rob, practice started 30 minutes ago. Or, Rob, we have to leave. The show is happening.
I don't know why we never made it.
That's great. It's crazy. It's crazy that
How are your 2 weeks there, buddy?
they're okay. I know. I feel like I've had such an eventful summer thus far that now I feel very like, yeah, it's fine. Nothing. I'm teaching again, so my summer is half over. I have one class that I teach
Yeah.
as a summer class, so I'm like, even that very small bit of responsibility that I have now feels like too much. It's too
Well,
much.
it's too late,
And
so
it's too
you
late.
got to
There's
deal with it,
nothing for
buddy.
me. How's it going in Rob Land and Robville?
And Robville, it's going okay.
Robport, population one.
Robville, Detroit.
This is
That's my segue into for the
into
uninitiated. Colton, what are we going to be talking about today?
today on our song Spotlight, which is not really what we call this, but it's also, I think, what we call this. We are going to talk about.
Colton says my girl here, but for some reason it doesn't pick up in the audio.
Performed by The Temptations, but written by Smokey Robinson
Written and
and
produced.
Ronald White. Although
Yep,
I'm not
of the
sure what Ronald
miracles.
White's,
I would assume he probably had a,
I don't know what the percentage is of
yeah, I they probably worked it out in court or whatever, you know.
that. That's every, this is just from like reading the history of, I mean, not necessarily this song, but I was reading a little bit into like other Motown songwriters that I like a lot. And most of them end the same way, which is something like the last three or four sections of the Wikipedia is just legal disputes with insert
Sure.
everyone. But then it's also like, oh, but we're still friends. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, it's weird. There's this all hands on deck like vibe for Gordy Records. at that point in time, which eventually turned into Motown Records, a better name for sure. But it is weird that it's while everybody is so involved in it, naturally, it has to turn into, you know, like, well, I want my pay. Could you imagine, like, you know, my friend Sam, or honestly, in the band I'm currently in, like, I would be so terrified.
Default American, by the way.
Yes, yes.
Buy the new record. Buy both new records.
Yes, yes. And we're working on a new one already.
Too much.
Too much.
Slow it down.
But it's got to be so difficult to be in that situation to where, like, what's the name of the bass player on it? Something Jameson.
Oh, Lord. We're already hitting against the we've hit the ceiling of my research for this episode. Give me a second.
I've done so much too, and I'm already blanking.
The bass on, oh no, I was gonna say, yeah, James. It sounds like a fake name. James Jamerson.
Yeah, Jamerson. But like, imagine, like, that's what makes you know the song starting, and he probably got, like, in his royalties, like 5%.
I mean, in a way, I'm grateful that we've never had to worry about royalty. I mean, what am I saying? I'm not grateful, but no, it's
I
just,
would love royalties.
Doing like percentages of songwriting, and that feels very, and especially like when it comes to musicianship, because something that I think we've hit multiple times on this podcast and looking at these singular song episodes has been a great way of talking about the little things in these songs. It's the songwriting choices, but it's also just like the personality that players bring to what are, I think in this case as well, pretty ordinary sounding parts for the most part, right?
I get you.
So it's like those are, like, that alchemy is sometimes what makes these songs feel so like mythical and bigger than they are. But it's like, how do you put that into like a percentage of like a royalty?
Well, you already brought it up to where it's like, what did Smokey do? What did Ronald do?
I mean, I know
Smokey Robinson produced this track. We haven't really done any of our banter. We're just diving in. But like
Micro,
was Ronald?
Baby.
Yeah, was Ronald just in there going like, "Here's the chord progression to your little vocal melody"? I don't know who wrote, because whoever wrote the lyrics, fine, but I don't think you should. I don't think you deserve a whole.
I don't think either is like, yeah, me. No, I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? To bring it back slightly, because we are going to talk about My Girl, everybody, in the second segment of this podcast. But
I'm Rob.
I'm Colton. Hi, we're doing. I want to say we're doing better. I think we're doing worse than usual. You know, but you know what? The numbers are
the numbers have gone up. The numbers have gone up recently. So
Rob and I are
listened.
We're pleased because we started doing these song spotlight episodes. Initially, it was slow sledding. We were like, okay, that's your sister. That's my mom. Where's her?
We know who was listening. Yeah.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, the chain is
skyrocketed.
It's off the chain, man.
It's off the chain.
Who knew Fleetwood Mac? Not the Beatles, not Bob Dylan. not Bruce
Cockburn.
You know that in my class, I'm teaching a memoir. I really like it. Uncanny Valley, a memoir. It's about a humanities major who graduates and moves to Silicon Valley to work in the tech industry. But the author's name is Anna, and then it's Weiner. So how would you pronounce that?
Weiner. Weiner?
In class, I've said Weiner, and I looked up the pronunciation today because I'm about to officially teach it more tomorrow. And Wiener. It's Weiner. It's Weiner.
It's Weiner.
It's just, it's like W, like the, you know, the phonetics Wiener. Are Weiner, like a real hard. And I told my wife, I'm like, God, I'm going to have to say that name so many times tomorrow.
And try not to chuckle. You got to seem like the adult in the room.
And she said, just say it the other way. No one's going to. And I'm like, I'm tempted. And like have like a, well, the old German pronunciation would be Weiner.
Wiener.
Wiener.
And a Wiener, which is also goofy. And how do you not chuckle at that?
How do we not chuckle, everyone?
Yeah, come on. You got to laugh.
You look good.
Thanks, man. I got the Zoom mullet, as I like to call it, to where it's like business up top, casual down below, where I'm just like in shorts and flip flops underneath this, but I got a nice little collared shirt. Let's go Dodgers.
I know I haven't looked at the score from when I last stopped watching, so I don't want to see it. I'm going to look later, but
I have two friends at that game right now.
Sadly enough, I thought about going to these San Francisco games, but it's so hot. So, honestly, if I was there today, I'd be miserable.
I'm more upset because I get informed of this yesterday. They're like, yeah, come up. I'm like, I'm not going to San Francisco on a last second.
I would not. Do they drive from Southern California to go to San Francisco?
No, one lives there. One, I believe, is from San Diego. So that's the one who went. But neither one of them are really Dodgers fans. That's the part that really upset. The sports fans in general. They're there for the experience of the stadium.
This might be more like a Colton thing. I don't want to put your friend who I likely know out to dry at all, but I wouldn't do that. You and I are both pretty big Dodger fans to a point where it's like a problem for me.
I would say so.
Take a step back.
I was very upset when we hit. Did we hit seven straight losses or were we?
We did. Six? We hit seven, which, and it's funny because I was thinking, God, they haven't played this bad since the year they went to the World Series. And then I realized this was since 2017 is when they had like one of the best stretches of baseball historically ever. And then right
summer.
After that, they were the worst team in baseball for like a month.
I think I saw somewhere where they haven't lost six straight games since like the aughts or something. It was bad. It was ugly.
It was a bad stretch, but I'm always of the opinion now, like I've always heard it's like regular season doesn't matter. And like for a team like the Dodgers, for the most part, and at one point this will be not correct. And I'm ready for that season to come eventually. But at this point, it's hard not to see the regular season. It's just spring training to see who's going to make the playoff roster. And so when I see them have a bad stretch like this, all I hope, and I do have confidence in the front office, but I hope that they're taking notes on who is the reason why we're losing these games. And
I would say, I mean, I can say the names really quick. The first three batters of the lineup. They're not going anywhere, but that was a cold spell for sure. Conforto's going to be gone soon, I'm pretty sure.
I have a dream of Dustin May and Michael Conforto in a trade package for Nolan Arenado. That's just a...
See, I'm not in on it anymore. Nolan
you
Arenado,
want to lose Muncy?
Nolan Arenado 4 years ago, fine. But what he's doing now, I'm just like, all right.
You don't want his glove? I love Muncy, but...
His glove isn't that spectacular anymore. It's still good. I mean, he's going to be better than Muncy. I love Muncy, though. I don't want to get rid of him. I want him to be Dodger for life.
If you're listening going, what's happening? We're going to talk eventually about my girl.
Yeah, it's always second segment, guys. We've already talked a little bit about my girl, so.
Yeah. Hey, ease off, people who haven't said anything to us.
Yeah, exactly. Email us.
Ooh, at no.your.wirtes.
How do you do that every time?
writes.podcast@gmail.com.
That's the email now. It's actually no.your.wirtes. How do you do this every time? writes.podcast.
It's impossible to know. I have one game for you, and then I have a very small advertisement that I'm just going to start, and hopefully they'll listen and play ball afterwards.
Okay.
The game I have is in our Apple Podcast reviews right now. We have 10 reviews of like this 5-star reviews. We have 9 of those that are 5 stars. Very nice. Thank you for those who did. We have one 1-star review out of those 10.
Casey Crescenzo.
And we don't know. We don't know, but my game is, what episode do you think? And I think it was a recent one. I'm just curious. What episode do you think brought on the 1-star review?
The 1-star review. I mean, I just can't help but think it's Casey Crescenzo.
of Deer Hunter fame.
Of Deer Hunter fame, yes. But
in quotations.
So you know what the episode is.
I don't. I should have said it was more of a thought exercise than a game, but...
But you think it's a recent episode?
My other thought was, in looking at the list here, maybe, what's his face? Darren from System of a Down.
Could be. You know, honestly, for the System of a Down episode, it could be me. Just like two of these guys are dicks. Love you, Max.
I don't know. I think we're pretty nice for, I don't know. I mean, what is nice anymore? I don't know.
I don't care. I'm just happy that we have ratings. It's much appreciated. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, everybody. Thank you all. I just hope everyone's having a good summer, man. Summer's, I love summer. I didn't know, it's funny. This is the first summer in a long time where I'm like, summer. Like, I'm like really into summer. Like, I'm watching a bunch of like summer media. And I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's been a great summer. The hell?
I don't know what's going on with me. I do. I like to.
Is this the advertisement moment?
Brought in several different. I have a gluten tolerance issue, everyone. I don't have celiac disease. Actually, I officially know that for sure. I just got a blood test.
Congratulations.
Happy, you know, for you. It's the little wins you got to take in life. But I know I have a gluten intolerance, and I've always been trying to track down good gluten-free beer and greens gluten-free.
Yeah, that's a big old G on that can.
It is. What's great about it,
lowercase, but yeah.
It's not just one of these other breweries that like throw the gluten-free community a bone and like go, oh, sure, we're making some in the same place that we make all of our other beer. And so it doesn't really help. But this is by someone with celiac disease. Man, it is pretty damn delicious.
I agree. So, well, I mean, I'm sure it is. I shouldn't say I agree. I couldn't help but in the back of my head go like, Leo, I hope you're listening. And can we address this next episode? Is Colton a hipster? Or is Colton not a hipster?
Having a gluten intolerance has nothing to do with being a hipster. It's biological.
Email us. Just yeah, email
please, us. Throw it out there. Yeah, so Greens, gluten-free, dry-hopped lager. IPA is pretty good. And this episode is brought to you. Greens, play ball, man.
Yeah. I'm all going right. Pacifico. I'm sure there's plenty of gluten in it.
Lots. It's swimming in gluten.
Yeah. Well, this episode is gluten-free.
It is. You know what? That's actually a true statement. 50% gluten-free. I mean, I'm not going to just start talking to everybody about what it means to be gluten-free, but it is much easier now.
Here he goes. Yeah.
No, yeah. Wouldn't that be? But yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about my girl. Should we hit up the Blamley?
I think that would be for the best.
I think we've reached the limit of this. Okay. So this episode is actually brought to you by Base Blown. I always want to say Base Blown.
spell Base Blown. We like to call him the Blamley. It's happening now. Oh my God, it's happening now.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball Entertainment podcast.
Hey.
Oh, hey, man.
Is this our new way coming back from commercial breaks? Hey.
Hey, yo. What's going on? Is that the soundtrack to Remember the Titans?
It is. It's the only vinyl I have that has the Temptations on it.
Oh, what is on? What's the Remember the Titans?
I can't remember the title off the top of my head, but it's I know you wanna leave me, but I refuse to let you go. I beg and plead for your sympathy. I don't mind. Ain't Too Proud to Beg, I think is.
Okay. I looked up the, like, I was just curious, like the top 100. And of course, the only place I could find in the quick bit I was looking at was Rolling Stone. They had their like top 100 songs of Motown. Mm-hmm. and My Girl was number 6.
Well, and I think they did also just like top 500 best songs, and like I think they revamped it toward like now it's like 30 something.
I know they redid that because they're, I think their first go at, I mean, Rolling Stone is, you know, what they are, but
yeah.
Yeah, they redid it to have like not just a bunch of old white bands, not just the Rolling Stones, like every 10 tracks, but
yeah, and don't get me started. I actually just had a conversation with somebody recently of the Rolling Stones against the Beatles. It's like, dude, it's the Beatles. I can't. And it's not even trying to my own personal bias. I'm just going like, is there a great Rolling Stones album to you?
I'm not the person to ask. I don't have.
Understandable. All right. Email us. but I just don't think they have a beginning to end great album. Whereas the Beatles, I'm like, they have, well, all of its beginning to end great albums. But
okay. So you're not. You're just.
I mean, but the Rolling Stones have unbelievable songs.
I would say this. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how we got here, but I like where we are. I like the scenery. I think the Rolling Stones are like, there are songs of theirs I hear, and I'm like, I get that. But I also know, much like the Beatles, they're just kind of riffing a lot on like blues, like R&B stuff too. Like,
slow down on the much like the Beatles.
Much like, I mean, the Beatles. I think the Beatles said, in fact, I think, who was it? Was it John Lennon or someone who said they're trying to do a Smokey on some of their records?
Nice segue.
But I do think there are songs by Rolling Stones I've heard, like Wild Horses. When I hear it, I'm like, this song's beautiful, man. And
Wild Horses is amazing.
There's a kind of felt like element to that song that I don't hear from certain Beatles songs that you enjoy.
But I mean, I'll continue along with just giving Stone some credibility for some reason. Play With Fire, great tune. You can't always get what you want.
Beautiful.
Yeah, great tune. Except the children's choir. I'm like, we could cut that out. Under My Thumb.
So,
yeah.
this is no your random Rolling Stone songs. Everybody.
We're still kicking off the rust, apparently.
Wait, so are we back? I think we're back.
Ooh, do we have a chance to have this not be part of the episode?
I think this could not be. I wasn't expecting it to. I was just talking to you.
No, I think we're back.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah. So,
that's my out to you. That's my out. And I could also come in and just...
I was going to say, now you can usurp any of my editing powers, so...
I've realized, everybody, that GarageBand does allow me to make cuts to an MP3. Mm-hmm. And I am about as empowered as I should feel.
Took you, what, 62 episodes?
So, can I ask, we've been trading songs, going back and forth for these Song Spotlight episodes. I think we both started pretty high in like the sort of rock slash folk sort of pantheon of like modern rock and folk music, right? Let It Be in like a Rolling Stone. We've gone other places since then, right?
Yes.
But why My Girl? Like what made you want to do this song for this week?
You know, it's just any time that song comes on, I just can't help but think of how iconic the song is. And it just felt like because you chose Bruce Cockburn and like the songs we were starting to choose and seeing the listens, I just felt like maybe we're not choosing the right. Not saying that they were bad choices. Don't take this the wrong way. I'm just saying that it just felt like, okay, it's a good move if we're going to do one song for an episode, we should choose something that has such a huge cultural impact.
Interesting.
And so it felt like this song was a great selection, and I don't want to give too much away on how I feel about the song right now, but it just felt like a perfect song selection to break down true songwriting and true creativity and composition of a tune.
So much like the song itself, this is a decision for maximum amount of sales and success.
Yes.
Interesting.
But I do think the cultural impact goes beyond just writing songs for girls to get like wide-eyed to, because Smokey Robinson already even said,
I was gonna say that is a Smokey Robinson paraphrase, but that is a quote of his.
Yeah. Which I get it. It's there.
And I do think we should very quickly address this. It's like ongoing And we don't always, because sometimes it's like hard to address those things, but there's a bunch of stuff going on with Smokey Robinson that
probably we
won't get into in the rest of this episode.
No, I don't think we need to dive into recent accusations against him.
Because we live in 2025 and that's the way everything is ruined.
Yeah.
And so
let's just pretend it's the 90s, everybody, where we all think he's a sweetheart.
Know that everything you love is awful at some point. So I mean, Motown stuff, man, my experience growing up with the Motown music, like that sound, is almost all relegated to my mom really loving Diana Ross and the Supremes. And that's Holland, Dozier Holland, that songwriting group, right? That wrote basically almost all of their, not all of them, but most of their kind of bigger hits. And like Marvin Gaye. And I'm not actually, there wasn't a lot of Temptations at my house and not a lot of Smokey Robinson either, I think, because of that.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever really focused. Like my family or my parents had a lot more of a, you know, like classic rock. So definitely 60s music, but not necessarily the Motown impact. But like K-Earth 101, we that was definitely the radio station just for any car ride. And so I'm very happy you didn't ask me what's my history with this song. I'm like, I don't know the first time I heard this song, but it was just always around and it was always wonderful to hear.
Well, I think that's the reason I didn't is also because I don't think you have to ask anybody what their history with that song is. Like, it's not like, you know, the Moody Blues or Bruce Coburn where it's like, how did we find these songs necessarily? It's like, I don't know if even with Let It Be and like a Rolling Stone, like those are like important songs, right? In the 20th century. But I wouldn't necessarily say I think everyone has heard them. I don't think like younger generation, I don't think they're like, I mean, because Rolling Stone isn't getting played on the radio a lot anymore. Or right? And
way too long.
Let It Be. I mean, they're not like the kind of songs you're going to hear like at a barbecue if you have a certain radio station playing or whatever. And I could hear my girl like walking through like, you know, a grocery store or something that has like a radio on. Like it's a song that you've like always heard. It's always been around. And I think a lot of Motown songs are like that, which is crazy.
Well, and interestingly enough, while it is a standard, it is kind of a catapult for the Motown era. I mean, this was recorded under the Gordy label, which we were saying before, which eventually turns into Motown. This song is kind of quintessential to launching Motown into another stratosphere. It's a standard, and it just felt like a really good choice to for us to try to break down how it came to be, how it was created.
Yeah, I've already kind of hinted at part of my like kind of initial read on it. And then like going through a couple more times to see how accurate that felt. It's like a good mixture to me of what we've already seen, which is these really simple components that like, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. Like there's a kind of synergy at work, right? And alchemy, this sort of additional something, like when you see what these like little pieces are doing. And yet there's also like flourishes, like, and a lot of that that comes with like the strings and things.
The
like
strings and the horns,
the harmonies,
add a great nuance. The harmonies,
those are the things that I think honestly give it more of its staying power. Like, I don't think a version of the song that was like stripped to its roots. And I'm not trying to say that to critique the songwriting. I'm saying I think it gives you a new dimension, to me at least, of songwriting. Of like, there's the DNA of a song. But I don't think the DNA in this case is what gives it the staying power it has. I think it's the flourishes that give it that added extra. Because otherwise, I personally don't think a lot in the song, when you're like scrutinizing it, which normally we're not, right? I like that song.
Every now and then, scrutinizing.
When we're scrutinizing. No, I'm saying like in our daily lives.
Gotcha.
Sitting down with microphones.
Not talking about the podcast.
Literally, this podcast is scrutinizing, but I don't think about it. But when I scrutinize the song, now I'm like, oh yeah, why is it so popular? The lyrics aren't that great. they're really kind of, and
the lyrics are accessible and like very basic emotion, like to where I think that's the aspect that makes the lyrics considerably good. You know, and we'll dive a lot more into that. But it's everything is just the nuanced approach to the song, and that's what it's the sum of all its parts. That's what makes the song so special, I think, or what's the word? Timeless.
Yeah.
You know, and that because you're right. If you're just playing it on acoustic, which I have actually been for the past few days, just trying to figure out the chords and everything, it's gonna be kind of dull if it's just, you know, some guy with an acoustic just singing it.
But doing that little run, that C, that do 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 do.
Well, let's kick it off. I mean, when it starts with doing the boom 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 boom, mm-hmm. already it's like, all right, I'm feeling it. It's such a simplified little bass groove. We're in the key of C, and he's doing the 5-1-1, the fifth. So he's starting with a G to the C, and simple bass groove. It's got the right attack. Like we said, the made up name James Jamerson. He's coming in, and again, this is where I get like, did he come up with that? You know, because that's songwriting credit at that point,
like, right?
Or was Smokey like, hey, give me doom 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 doom? I doubt it.
This is where our conversation in the first segment about like royalties and that, I am just to kind of quickly finish the thought. I don't think I finished in the first segment. I am grateful in a lot of ways that we never had to do that kind of stuff because it's messy. Like if you're writing, like I have like written a song, right? I've written several,
but yes,
I also know that I have way too many. Brought those songs into other people, like with other people to like, you know, with players to try to help finish, like having very clear ideas in my head of how I want it to go. And almost always out of like percentage wise, the song ends up being like, I think in my most accurate representation of what I wanted that song to be, like 90%, but the other 10% was always what other people were doing. Like, so to your point, right? I think that's, when you're in that kind of process, which I mean, it reminds me of the way Hollywood studios used to work too, where it wasn't about this one person trying to be like the auteur, right? It wasn't about like singular directors. It was studios. And it was like a whole system of everyone, directors included, screenwriters, costume designers. They were all working under these big studio monikers. And it wasn't about these individual auteurs as much as it was this like kind of big team system. And in a way, when I think of Motown, I mean, there's definitely songwriters, but it's also, that's what I think makes those kinds of musical moments so cool to me, is that it is a community. Like it's the way we talked about Seattle, right? Where just like everyone's kind of playing with everyone at once.
Like Motown, like, what is it? Like the Funk Brothers are like a huge like studio band that comes in. They come in on this song. They come in on plenty of other hits. To where there's so many moving pieces, it's got, again, it's just got to be difficult to figure out where the royalties go. Because I think, you know, James Jamerson, or right after that bass groove, Robert White, go Roberts, let's do it, comes in with that guitar riff, man.
Which is, I don't know, it's one of those guitar riffs where it's like, is it, like, what is it? This is not the last time I'm gonna struggle with how to characterize the way I feel about this song, because it is a very good song.
Yeah.
But don't. I love the rise in that. Like I love it's kind of where the bass is this steady kind of repetitive, like almost going in circles, and it's like this constant rise. Like that's a cool effect. But when you just play it, it's just like a little like run. Like it's not like.
It's a little run. It's got a little bit of its own bass characteristic to it. So to where it's like those two are kind of dancing together. And I mean, of course, you have the vocals kick in. But then it hits the second part of the, because I mean, while it's great, you hear the like, I just like that second part. Nobody knows how to play that. let me rephrase that. Nobody ever, they just learned the intro part, you know, for the guitar riff. But that little second run,
it's like all, one, it's like a F, right?
Yeah, it's like CF
F to a G.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just CF, CF.
Boom, bo, do, do. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And but it's just the fact that it's coexisting with a bass groove already, or having, because they're both, like I said, they're both kind of rooted in a similar ideal. You know, like you could have the bass go like boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. But no, like they just find that perfect little balance, that little like complementing each other.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is perfect. And of course, David Ruffin's voice just starting it off.
Well, I mean, this is where I think my previous argument, like it, like the arrangement of the vocals, and that's mm-hmm. like, you know, I think when you think of the Temptations, right? That is, to me, like, I'm not a huge Temptations guy, but it's like any of those like Motown groups, like those vocal arrangements, I think like they're timeless for a reason. Like you just keep seeing people trying to improve upon what, like yeah. what they've done so well. It's great. And his, am I correct? He had just joined.
Yeah, he had just joined. Eddie Kendrick was basically the lead vocalist for the Temptations.
Mm-hmm.
And like Smokey Robinson apparently heard David Ruffin's voice and just loved the baritone and like how he was able to manage his voice, and just went like, I'm writing this song for him to sing. He never wanted the Miracles to do it. He just went like, that's the voice for this. And it was the right move. It was the right move to charm all the women. but that actually, again, this is the cultural impact of just that decision alone kind of not only catapulted the Temptations that much more, because also now you get the David Ruffin fronted vocals, like when we were just talking about the Return of the Titans, what is it called? Remember the Titans, terrible. but for that, I Know You Want to Leave Me, again, that's David Ruffin. It's like it shifted their sound. It's their first number one single, and David Ruffin gets a lot of credit for that because of just that soulful voice that he comes in with.
Mm-hmm. And it's also the way, like, I love talking about melody, because I think melody is where it's the, like, I can rail against how frustrated I get with lyric writing all the time, but melody writing is like the make or break factor, right?
Absolutely.
Even with good lyrics, like, it's not going to matter if the melody doesn't matter. And we've just talked about how well the bass and the guitar kind of complement each other, this really cool interplay, and that the vocals are this, like, and I'm not just talking the vocal performance. The melody is this really kind of like lyrical, like just kind of slides on top of both of them, right? Mm-hmm. If both of them are these almost kind of rigid like runs, and like one's this kind of repetitive, and then the vocals just kind of
smooth, it just leaned into it perfectly, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, when it hits the chorus, that's the worst lyrics that happens. The I Guess You Say, like, that's, but that's how good the melody is, because that's where I'm like, yes, for as twee as all the lyrics are on this song,
those lyrics are just I call it counting syllables. Like, when you don't know, like, you know what you actually, no, I don't think you know what you want to say. You just know you need a certain number of syllables to get to something, so you throw things like I guess that mean nothing.
Exactly. Yeah, for the chorus, I guess you say, and it's just like, what the fuck is that?
Like, and that happens all the time, so it's not like a, you know. But
then it's followed up by, again, I'm going to just use twee because you said it so much last tour. I think this song is a twee song. It's kind of cutesy lyrics, you know, but it's just like, what can make me feel this way, my girl? It's like, okay, it resolves perfectly to I Guess You Say, kind of stupid, but what can make me feel this way, my girl? I'm like, okay, that's universal. It's
so repeating of a single phrase for a chorus. It's interesting.
It's not a repeating thing. He says my girl,
talking about my girl. That's five times.
But he's not saying it every time. There's a call and response to it.
In fact,
that call and response is excellently executed.
Oh, it's
assuming it's probably Eddie Kendrick who sings the second one, because it's like, it's my girl, one voice, and then the
group, and then the
my girl, talking. Whoa. Like that. Again.
Can you do all that again? That was great. That was very good.
For anybody who didn't listen to the previous episode, there's a reason Colton's giving me a hard time for repeated lyrics.
I would never, 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 never do that to you.
You have to say never a few more times.
It's a lot of nevers. Is it too many nevers? It might be. But I really love that song.
I hated your episode description.
Oh, I God. Knew, buddy. I knew it. That was just for you. No, I mean, I don't want to skip too quick to the chorus. But I mean, the thing is, like you said, this song is not long. And it's not like I've been talking about the arrangements in that. Mm-hmm. Like the bridge of this song is masterful. Like the bridge is the part where like all my previous comments about the kind of, you know, mundanity of this track, but also then like, you know, there's something about it. I honestly, the arrangements in the vocals of the chorus, but then the bridge and like what the strings do. And even that, like that key change from the C to the D, it's D, right?
Yeah. It's C to D. It's masterful work because what they're doing on that, so they're doing that's just F, G, F, G. Mm-hmm. Or C, F. And that's all fitting into the scale of C. Then it hits the D minor 7, still fitting into the scale of C. And then it hits the, where right there, they're hitting the G major, which fits into the scale of C and also D. And then it hits the E minor, which fits into the scale of C and also
It almost doesn't
D.
feel like a key change. Like when I was hearing it, I didn't catch it initially.
And then it hits out like bum, 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 bum. A major only fits into the D major scale. And it's just unbelievable. And it's the fifth chord in the scale, which naturally wants to lead into the root, which is the D. Masterful.
So
masterful chord change or key change. Unbelievably good.
It's cool. And then you have this chorus now, the final like verse and chorus, right? Where I mean, the whole point of a key change, at least in my experience, and I've done it like twice. Like I'm not a key change person.
Very rare on my end too. Yeah.
But I think that's also over. I don't know a lot of like artists where they use it often, right?
That's what I'm saying. It's a different level of songwriting to where you can hear something like that. It's very easy to just stick to the scale of a song and make those adjustments.
But easy to overdo. Like if I have two tracks in an album that both do it, like all of a sudden it feels like a gimmick as opposed to like it creates a moment, right? Yeah. But what happens then is that the stakes of that final chorus feel lifted. Like it feels like if you're unfamiliar with anybody, like key change, Rob has already explained it really nicely, like in terms of like the chords, like the keys that you're using it. But if you've ever been hearing a song and the chorus feels, usually it's higher, right? They're going to move it to like a higher key and it gives the kind of added
lift.
Drama, right? It's almost like watching a film and having, you know, like saving like that big climactic scene. But not every song needs it and not every, but Amen. Also sometimes like the chorus can feel it's a gamble. Cause if you have a chorus that works really well, you want that, you know, you'll see people engineer a song, especially a kind of a pop song like this, right? Where the chorus is easily repeatable. And that's really what people are going to take out, right? Everything else that builds around the song doesn't matter as much. And so to have one of three choruses be totally different, it's a little bit of a gamble, but it works. It makes that song feel like a piece.
It doesn't seem forced too. Like exactly what you're saying, to where you can have people try. I've done it myself to where I'm going like, hey, maybe a scale change. And Molly's like, no, it doesn't feel natural. You can understand the science of how to do it, but it's understanding the nuance of when to do it, you know? And in this song, it's perfectly placed. And again, I don't need no money. Like just everybody's doing. And another thing I really wanted to during that bridge segment. Hey, hey, hey. Might be my favorite lyric in the entire song. I just love having that. Dun, dun, bum, 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 dun, 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 dun. Hey, hey, hey. Like. It's such a silly thing, but I love it because it accents them. And can can we both agree during that segment? Don't you just see them dancing? I don't know if it's maybe just me, like you close your eyes and you hear a classical song and you see like roses, you know, budding during springtime or blooming during springtime. For this song, during that moment, I could just see them doing a little like dance, clap. Like, I feel like
I'm trying to get sucked into this magic you're talking about. I feel very cold. I'm like, no, I imagine a cold, empty room.
You're just like a strobe light going. You're locked into a fucking small confined space.
I'm sitting in the
space.
Dark, and I'm like, yes, yes, hey, yes.
I don't know. It's the looseness of that moment. It just, I love all the decisions. I think the bridge is the masterclass in songwriting when it comes to this song.
I agree. I mean, it's funny because the track that you brought previously, Tuesday Afternoon, I think mm-hmm. it was similar. It was the way that track, not necessarily key change, but the way that track kind of transformed, right? And the like transitions, yeah. Like there's, I think, something about a song that can almost kind of bury the lead. I mean, think of like the other kind of like timeless classics, right? And not necessarily okay. Motown, but songs where like we know there are songs that exist where like you hear it and you haven't heard it for a long time and you realize, oh, this song had a verse, like all you know is the yeah. chorus because for yeah. your entire life that's what you've heard. It's funny, I remember when we did The Who, and for all my life I heard, I call that a bargain, the best every stupid
come buy
car.
A new Toyota,
exactly, yeah, yeah, every car commercial ever. And I'm like, oh, these verses are good. Like, you kind of,
yeah.
But that's not the hook of the song, right? And what I think is so cool about My Girl is I don't think it's the true with My Girl. I think My Girl is one of those tracks where the chorus is not the most interesting part. And I think the song as a whole, like its construction, right? And the yeah. way that it does that journey you talked about, that's what makes it memorable.
Sure. And it's interesting you just bringing up the chorus. I'm like, what is the chorus? Is it just when you go like, my girl, my girl, my girl? And I'm like, that just seems more like a resolve from everything that's happened right before it. So it's like, it's almost like the verse and the chorus are functioning as the hook.
Well, yeah, because that bridge is the kind of heightened, right? And the chorus mm-hmm. doesn't have a kind of, yeah, you're right. It's not like bombastic, which... Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no, I take that back. There's a lot of great bombastic choruses in Motown. So it is yes. kind of different.
Yes.
I was like, is there a lot? Oh, yeah, like everything. But it is, yeah, it is kind of like it's already falling action, right? Even the melody, perfect. you're already kind of sloping back down to the verse.
Yeah. I can't get over when it does a key change. And just how like, it's hard to believe, like, if you were to start the song and then hit pause, scroll ahead, and hit the third chorus. Like, holy shit, it's not in the same scale. That's how just gradual it goes into it. Mm-hmm. But everybody, it's just everybody's hitting on all cylinders. The horns, the strings, the vocals.
This might be one of the few songs that we both have talked about where the drums are the quote-unquote, or I'm not going to say that, there's just the least interesting.
Yeah.
And not necessarily, I mean...
Not in a bad way. I love that drum fill that he recycles throughout the entire... Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that... I guess you... Like, yeah. Perfect placement. It almost enhances the vocal melody a little bit more. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I know we're both of the philosophy of... With drums, at times, less is more. But there mm-hmm. are also times where the drums... have to do the heavy lifting to make a song interesting, and it kind of depends, right, on what the yeah. rest of the song is doing. Mike Marsh, I see you are seen, Dashboard Confessional, but that's not always the case. Like, it doesn't always have to do that. And then there are times where the drums do too much when they don't have to, and then that's also kind of a disaster.
Can we just cover this really quick? So bass player James Jamerson,
yeah,
you know the name of the drummer, also sounds like a fake fucking name.
Yeah, Benny Benjamin.
Benny Benjamin. These are nicknames, right? These have got to just be like around Hitsville, USA.
I mean,
They're all
so William Benny. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is a nickname because it's William Benjamin. Although that's two first names, man. Yeah. William Benny Benjamin. So I didn't want to go by Willie, but nicknamed Papa Zeta.
Papa Zeta, that's right.
That's fine. And then James Jamerson, that's actually his name. Actually, James Jamerson. Paul Reiser did the horn and string arrangements. I should call that out because he...
Yep.
Honestly, if we're talking about like royalties and that, I hope he got a cut of something.
He deserves a higher percentage than a lot of people involved with the song.
And it's funny because I am so like of a school of songwriting where to me, like the people who produce like the skeleton of a song, and I produce a lot of skeletons of songs.
You got a lot of skeletons.
I have a lot of skeletons in not even just my closet. They're overflowing in my house. Yeah, they're everywhere. But I'm of the belief of there's something to that, right? Like there's a craft to that. But I think learning more and seeing more examples of like how much arrangements and just the thought process behind how to populate the skeleton of a song makes it so different to me. I mean, one of the best experiences I ever had as a songwriter was helping you all write, I don't even remember what it's called. Lipstick on your white collar. Or Devolved American. And all I did was the lyrics. Like you all already had the guitar in that. But even so, like all I was doing, I didn't think you all had like an actual arrangement yet. You hadn't written anything. I just had the acoustic to write to.
Yeah. I was actually just talking to Voldemort about this the other day. Like where I was like, I don't think I did anything on that song. He was like, you actually structured it. Or like, okay, maybe that's the case. Cause I was like, Colton wrote the lyrics. Robbie came up with the guitar riff. And I think it just like between you two manifesting a real idea, I'm like, all right, let me just give it its guideline to where this is how it's going to start and end.
But and see, that's the thing is I know if I would have like, I mean, it's impossible, right? To like try to like do that on my own. Like I would have had to have had the song, like the chords myself, which I didn't, but I know it would have sounded differently. And so hearing you all produce it the way you did, I'm like, that's what made it so gratifying. That's what made that experience so cool to me is like getting to see, like, I don't know, there's something so kind of uplifting to me about what writing is. And it's like different from doing, cause like, you know, I'm also like writing books and stuff right now, trying to, and there's definitely a certain kind of synergy that comes in like editing, right? And having other people read it. Like, I'm not saying that's solo, but there's something about music that is so unique, right, of the arts, where you get to hear that and like it totally, like the DNA of something totally changes.
It's fascinating to try to bounce an idea off somebody. The last episode, briefly, it was mentioned that I had sent you a song that I was working on. I wish I would have sent it to you last night, and I thought about doing it, but we've actually mapped it out a little bit together as a band, and it's incredible to see where it goes from just recording it onto, you know, a voice memo and then working it out in the studio with a band and seeing the direction it goes, because now the song is like so much more grander. It's like bigger, and just hearing what everybody's little ideas are and seeing the direction it goes for. I love what happened to it, but you can never tell what's going to happen. And that's where like the importance of what happens in so many Motown recordings, and specifically My Girl, like it's all the right pieces came together to make sure that this song did not get destroyed by too many cooks in the kitchen.
Because if I'm being, this is my most controversial take on this song.
Are we going a little Beyonce here?
Not really. It's more of like the Smokey Robinson of it all. Like, if I'm being critical at all, it's that I think what I perceive to be the Smokey Robinson, like kind of touch on this is the least impressive. Like to me, the like things that go beyond the arrangements in that, like, so I'm thinking of the structure of the verse and the chorus and the lyrics themselves. Those things to me feel
pedestrian.
Yeah, that's a great word to put to it, right? Okay. And not in a way that's like a, you know, we've both, I literally just last episode said how I can appreciate craft at times over emotions, right? And I think this song is craft. It's not emotion because this song isn't,
I agree.
to say the song is about like an expression of love, that's great, but also it's not about that. It's
yeah. I read a review on it to where it was kind of funny to me to where I was talking. It's like, it's not possessive love. And I'm just like, all right, miss me. I get it. Yes, yeah. It's not possessive love. It's just like an infatuation. It's a song to where it's meant to be. I say it all the time. This song is written to be a hit.
It is. And I mean, it was. Congratulations.
Very worthy of it. But it's just like, there's no like, there's not an emotional edge to it.
There isn't. And anyone who is, I agree. I cry foul. And that's also okay. Right. Like, it's okay.
Of
like,
course.
I appreciate craft just like you do. And I think a lot of people do on a certain level. If you liked My Girl and you thought, yeah, you don't necessarily piece it together with images as much as it is the feeling. Right. And it's all a kind of like banal, just levity. But to me, what gives it, it's like actual, like that word we've used, mastery. Mm-hmm. I feel like those are elements outside of Smokey. Like, you could say he like brings pieces together. And in that way, you know, that's a skill too. But
sure.
I, beyond what's happening right now to Smokey Robinson, I don't have like real opinions of him as a songwriter. I think he has been very successful, but I don't always associate that with craft. Yeah, I don't know. This is an interesting song for me because it's actually making me reassess how I think about like the kind of like songwriter as a position versus what, you know, it's funny. It makes me think of like Led Zeppelin, where I was the one who was like, is jamming songwriting?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know.
It is. It isn't. It's a very weird nebulous to find yourself in at that point. But what I wanted to say about the lyrics, the true thing that I think makes this song such a well-written song is you got to think of what they're trying to find as their demographic. We're talking about
ick. You know, yeah. Demographic. Huh? Demographic.
Oh, I thought you said like ick as in I-C-K, like, ugh, gross. But,
Colton, calm down.
Yes, they're demographic. But like the fact that it's like, these are black artists trying to reach a mainstream audience, and they did. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not easy in 1964. Like, we got a lot of civil rights issues occurring, and this song reaches number one on the Billboard. That involves a lot of a white audience that is not necessarily going to be the most receptive. So like that cultural impact and their ability to actually make a song that can go across those boundaries is really impressive. And that's something that I love about this song tour. It's like, it's such a sweet, heartfelt song, like very, or not heartfelt, but like a sweet, again, I'll say it, a twee song, but it's so undeniably good that racist motherfuckers are still going like, hey, damn, that's a good tune.
I know it. I think the reason I am being somewhat tough on like that element of My Girl is there are other Motown songs that I think are on that front, at least, like able to produce like just absolute songwriting pop mastery. Right. Mm-hmm. But also couch it in lyrics and like an overall purpose to a song that, I mean, if I'm going to name off the top of my head two that I think are just top, what, like ever songs, not even just Motown. It's like, what's going on?
Great
Marvin Gaye.
And not a great album. Great tune.
And Can't Hurry Love.
Sure.
Springs.
Shit, man. I'll add one in on that. Change Gonna Come by Sam Cooke.
Yeah. And it's funny because Sam Cooke.
Oh, yeah. No, he was very successful, but Change Gonna Come, his best song. But there's a reason that song is not a success across all borders.
But yeah, I know. But you know what I mean? But he was that guy. He was like just, you know, writing songs to appeal to a wider community before that, right? Yeah. Before he decides to take a more kind of proactive stance.
Exactly. That's his you got to get
song.
Absolutely. But you got to get your foot in the door. And this song is a little bit of the foot in the door. Of going like, all right, now we can actually start launching more and more black artists who are just like, deny it. Try to deny it. And don't get me wrong. Yeah, like Chuck Berry preceded that. But it's just like, it's still just the steps. Like, and this song is such an important step within it.
Yeah. It's a really good point to make. And I think, you know, we have in covering other like pop albums and like very, like, it's funny that to see the kind of ebbs and flows of the term poptimism, right? Which I've used on this podcast before. If you're unfamiliar, it's a recent thing, right? Poptimism is, I think, more like in the 2010s of like really kind of embracing pop music, not just as like this music that everybody listens to, right? But as like culturally significant works of art. And I think we have both seen that work in awful ways, like to where people really just want to feel good about listening to music that makes them feel good. And I, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it's interesting to look back on the history of like, you know, just modern popular music and to see the way that even in those moments, right? Like in the 60s, there were, I mean, this is also when like jazz musicians were stretching the boundaries and being like politically active and radical. And yet, it's songs like this, right? And it's like a lot of like that Motown roster where it is like pop music. It's in this case, especially very like sugary, sweet pop music, like give you a cavity kind of stuff. But it's also, you can look back and see, like you said, like how historically important it is. And I don't necessarily think in terms of like the meaning of the song that gives it anything extra. But like you said, it is masterfully created.
Masterfully, it's a perfect pop song.
You know, I like that way of putting it.
It's just a great song. There's nothing wrong with listening to a song and just enjoying it and just dancing to it. And
I hope that message comes across in this podcast. I think
every now and then it doesn't, but I think this episode it came.
If you like songs, that's good. It's good to like songs.
Oh,
like
yeah. Songs. No matter what Colton and I say, like, we may give you shit if you like a song that we think is crap. But it doesn't matter. I mean, God bless my sister. She's the first one that I remember being a little kid going like, that song sucks. And she's like, I don't care if you like it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit, that's such a great approach to it. Like, but as long as you like it.
On the flip side.
Seriously, there's some stuff that goes into songwriting.
But and to say that I think that stance isn't like this like in threatened position. That's, I think the reason that this podcast exists is because we actually think the opposite. We're like, hey, think about stuff more. It's fun. It's also fun to think. And this is one of those great opportunities where you can do both. Like I can enjoy this song and like, I've been singing it now because I thought we were going to do it last episode. So yes, I've been singing it for a while.
I know 6 weeks we had to listen to this song.
6 weeks, buddy. And ask me how much of a Jamiroquai I've listened to.
Well, all right, I can put like I listen to Virtual Insanity.
Leo, well, you know, you're at, by the time Leo hears this, I'll
be ready. Oh,
yeah,
we put in the work.
We're fine. We're good.
Yeah,
but do you have for this segment at least anything you want to add to Art of Session and My Girl? Do you like the film?
My Girl, it gave me a phobia of bees.
Like most of us, that's fair.
Yeah, I'm like, when I saw the child actor who people said I looked like as a little kid get killed by bees.
Macaulay Culkin? People said you looked like Macaulay Culkin?
When I was a little kid, yeah. I was blonde, Children of the Corn looking.
That's fair.
Yeah. But yeah, sure, I like the movie. I love the Temptations documentary, or docu-pic, biopic.
Yeah, VH1.
Yeah.
Docu-pic.
I love that movie.
Doesn't it have the guy from Cool Runnings?
Like, I don't want to say yes or no.
I think it's time to end the segment. I think we're reaching the end of what we have to say.
Did you give any hints?
No. And do you know why?
Because you don't know.
I don't know yet.
I thought as much. We never said anything. So Colton has the length of the Blamley talking to you guys.
Very quickly, can I ask you? I want to get this on the tape. On tape, in quotes.
Okay. Yeah, no, we're recording analog.
Isn't it fun that we do that? I feel pressure from you now to make my pick like a like historically significant song. Would you appreciate if I did that?
I appreciate you.
That's so nice to hear. You know what? Yeah. Just hearing that from you, I feel really good.
Warm, fuzzy feelings going into the segment. Let's see what happens the third one.
I will say this. the chain has done better business than either. I mean, combined, Let It Be or Like a Rolling Stone. So I feel pretty emboldened right now.
Yeah, when I sent that to you and Casey, and she was like, oh, congratulations, guys. I'm like, no, it's not a congratulations thing. I'm more shocked at how many listens.
I think you're dismayed that people saw, like, we don't want to hear what they have to say about Bob Dylan or the Beatles. And then they're like, oh, rumors?
The chain. Let's do it.
Mac?
Yeah.
Hey, man, are they better? Does that mean that they're better?
Nope.
That's a good song.
Blamley.
Please save us, Blamley.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Danko, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
I actually wanted to say a few more things, but welcome back, everybody.
You have more things to say? Do you want to say them now? I'll cut them out.
Sure, why not? Dude, everybody listen to the Coheed episode that Colton. I listened to it last night just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
It's a really good episode.
I think there are certain episodes where it's like we've been preparing for that for a long time.
No, the really crazy thing is we talk about Shohei, and this is Shohei pre-Dodgers. We're talking about Shohei Ohtani on the Angels.
Wow.
And we're giving him his flowers then, to where I was like, oh, man. Okay, Colton and I were legit.
We're legit. And you know what? God bless him, man. Hey, God bless that man. And don't tell me. I don't want to know, but I'm hoping it works out.
Literally, so, my friend who is at the game, he's calling me right now.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know why I'm like, you know, but
I don't want to know either.
Weirdly enough, I have three possible choices.
Not weird.
For three, and I'm actually excited about all three. And so the thing is, I'm not going to tell you all three because I'm basically going to do them all. I'm like, okay, cool. I have the next three doled out. So
yeah, so choose one, and then you can give me hints after we do our ratings here.
Okay, I got it.
Cool.
I'm going to make my wife so happy. Which
can I say, do I know the artist in the song? Yeah. Okay,
you know all three.
Okay, cool. Because the Bruce Coburn kind of bothered me, Tori. I was like, don't give me hints on something I know nothing about.
I don't have to tell you, man. That was total and complete. That was for Colton.
You know what? And honestly, I take that back. I actually like hearing stuff that I haven't heard before.
That was for Papa C. You know what I mean?
Papa Cita.
That's, yeah. I apologize to Papa Cita for trying to take that name. You can have it, sir. Yeah. It's all yours. Although if I was named James Jamerson, not even. That's not the other guy.
I was going to say, it's Benny Benjamin.
If I was going by Benny Benjamin, that's all I would go by. I wouldn't go by Papa Zia.
Dude, could you imagine if my name was Greg? Greg McGregor?
Say McSailor? I don't know. We're done. Okay. Out of 100, which is the great rating system that my co-host and very good friend has created, out of 100... You know what I'm going to ask you, because I don't remember. What did we give Let It Be in Like a Rolling Stone?
85.
Okay. I don't want to ruffle feathers.
Ruffle away.
With where I'm at here.
You're a ruffian.
This is like a 70. I know, right? Everybody, for how much, I'm not trying to like, I don't get expensive haircuts.
Bragged about his $200 haircut.
And now my hair looks crazy. It was a $200, but you're in the ballpark. This guy, K-Luck, everybody, Japantown. He is very good. He has an Instagram thing, apparently, but he's a very nice dude, and he cuts good hair.
Well, just for me, next time you go in for a haircut, put your headphones on, and then we'll see if it...
Yeah, I'll tell him and be like, I need to research this for the pod, Zoom. Buddy.
Yeah.
This is a 77.5 for me.
Okay.
My girl. And I think it is all of the arrangement talk that we've gotten into pulls a lot of that for me. And I still have my reservations about, like, I think it's one of those songs where if I'm going to think about it on a critical level, how kind of vapid the lyrics and things get, even in a way of like, okay, it's pure levity and it's like an exaltation of like love and affection. That's great. But I also, I'm talking about craft, man. If I'm rating out of like, hey, at a cookout, I love to hear this song, 10 out of 10. But if I'm on a songwriting podcast, it's just never going to have the same weight. Like it's, and that's, to me, that's okay because I'm also in different, I'm in different moods and different points in my life with what I want and what I need. But yeah. I think that lyrics, I'm always going to die on that hill. They matter. And these lyrics aren't good. Like even, and I say that knowing like other songs, even in the Motown tradition, I already brought up Can't Hurry Love because those lyrics to me are amazing. They're perfect and they're better. And they're,
yeah,
and I it's mean, the her, same idea.
Her mom told her you can't hurry love. I get you. What a deep concept.
It's less about the concept than it is the execution.
Well, it, okay. So, to where I think that the execution is actually fantastic for this, but I also think it's kind of a temptation staple to have kind of lyrics that are
not good.
No, not the word I'm using. Okay. Not the word I'm using, but just a little, maybe a little straightforward.
This is not the first time that you and I have had this. I am not against straightforward lyrics. I mean, we talked about like Tom Petty, not a wordsmith, right? And I think you and I, you are better at this than I am. You are better at like, you're a better lyric writer than me anyway. And I know you don't believe that. Shit. I know you don't believe that, but
the
I know it's
listeners
true.
Don't believe that.
I know it's true, but
no, nobody believes that. You believe there, that, which is a compliment. I'll take it. I appreciate it.
But, I do. Yeah. But there is an approach to lyric writing where you don't see, I've mentioned it before, like you don't need the effort. And I hear effort. And not in the whole song. Like I think really? The bridge is great.
See, to me,
they don't do it, man.
I don't know. I can agree. It's kind of like as if you listen to it, trying to take away like, ooh, how are they trying to structure this poem? And it's like, yes, if I just read, I've got so much honey, the bees envy me. I got a sweeter song than the birds in the tree. Yeah, you can't. It's not going to do anything.
I'm not even going to do, like, I'm not even talking about on the page. I'm talking about the way it hits the ear to me. There's so much effort in the way the rhymes are constructed.
No, the way it hits the ears for me is just buttery smooth.
I gotta. This is that's the hill. So that's where the 77, that's why it's not in the 80s for me, because it is all about the arrangement, which, like I've said, like that is like pure, just everybody in the songwriting zone doing their business. Fantastic. Well,
and that's the difficulty behind how we try to break down this song to where it's like you're willing to die on a hill for lyrics. Mm-hmm. When it comes to a song like this, I'm like, no, the lyrics are literally last in what makes this song great. And you would agree with that for sure. But I'm like, it's last in my concern about this song. It's like, and even then I'm still kind of like, well, it's accomplishing what it's going for. It's trying to be a pop song in the fucking 60s. You know, I want to hold your hand is, you know, like that's the approach with all the pop songs is kind of like, okay, it's do or die love, you know, complete admiration of your partner is most of the themes that you get from pop music at that time. Mm-hmm. So I think this already is at the top of that list, but I mean this sincerely. It's an 86.
That's wild to me.
What did we give Let It Be?
That's not the wild part. Do I think this song is better than Let It Be? Maybe. Yeah, I do.
It's better than Dylan, too. On this,
it's better than that Dylan song. I'll say this.
That's what I'm saying, that particular Dylan song.
But actually, no, I don't know if it is. Lyrically, it's not. But I'm always going to think that.
Everything about the song, I'm going, it's perfect.
So it's not, though. The lyrics aren't perfect, man.
It's perfect for what it's doing. You know, like, what did you?
I think that's the difference.
Don't you think this song would be a little obnoxious if the lyrics were like that much more detailed?
I think let me make sure, like, let me kind of clarify what I mean here. I'm not saying, oh, it needs to be more intelligent and eloquent and like way more stuff. The melody is fantastic.
Of course.
It's the like. It's the way he's fitting rhymes in. I mean, the chorus is a great example of what I'm trying to say. Like I guess you say, like, it's, I think maybe the best way to kind of explain what our difference in this is, you are saying the same thing that I'm saying, but we're approaching it in a different way. You're like, that's like pop writing 101. And I'm like, I know pop writing is never going to produce what I consider to be like great songwriting. It's going to create hits and it's going to create moments of like, wow, that's great. But the kind of pop songbook, like the formula that songs like this create, in my head, it's always going to be slightly a bastardization of what I recognize as good songwriting in a very similar way of any other art form. Like when you think about, like, you know, filmmaking, when you're studying, it's funny. I think you and I were just talking about Jaws, or I texted you about Jaws, right?
Yes.
That is, I love that movie. But I also, it's the prototype of like summer blockbuster, right? And it's got all these like big hands in the screenwriting part of it. It is, as a summer film, it's like, it's perfect, man. Is it ever going to hit my like top 10 of like truly great films? I don't think so, because there's something about it that is, it's where I think people want pop music to mean more than it, I think it ever should. And I don't think, I mean, that's what makes pop music what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, because a few ideas popped into my head.
Yeah.
Well, like Jurassic Park, great fucking summer film. One of my favorite movies.
Another good example.
But like, for everybody to go like, oh, the Jurassic worlds are terrible, I'm like, it's following a similar structure. It's like, we can't act like the script for Jurassic Park is unbelievable. You know, it's just like, it's fun.
It was the first one.
And to be fair, I do think, like, I'm trying not to go on a big tangent here, I think that the suspense of the first Jurassic Park is way better than the rest of the series.
Buddy, say the word. If you say next episode we're just gonna talk about Jurassic Park, you know I'm in.
We're both pretty big.
You have Jurassic my axe. Yeah. You have my sword.
But with the pop song like this, with My Girl, I like the inclusivity of it all. Like, the lyrics, while they are, it's hard for me to use the exact word vapid. Like, I don't think it's lacking emotion. I don't think it's completely void of that. But it is lacking a little bit of, like you said, cleverness, eloquence, you know. But you can listen to it and not have to overthink or feel like you gotta, I don't know, like a song like a Rolling Stone. You know, like, that's a song where it's like, okay, I got to be involved with these lyrics. It's you need to kind of soak it in, because that's the point of the song. With a song like this, it's feel good. It's the vibe. And I just don't think that the lyrics take away from the song.
The last thing, and I mean,
no, clearly I'm the last thing. Okay,
you should get the last thing.
No, I'm playing. I'm playing.
I'm going to get second to last thing. You should, though. If for anyone who's hearing me and being like, this dude, like, what does he want Motown to be like? Calm the F down.
Need from Smokey?
Listen, well, I think he owes people some answers, but
he does.
Holland, Dozier, and Holland, those guys, those are my guys, man. And if people want to listen to their songwriting, that's what I'm talking about. It's the same thing, right? And on the surface, it's the same. And it's like, you know, Stop in the Name of Love. Like, it is like, geez. And yet, to my ear, right? And not even just looking on the page, like just to the ear. That's the same kind of like easy and free pop songwriting, but there is more of a fluidity. Like, it feels less forced in terms of like the way syllables fit to the rhymes and those things. But that's the last thing, because what I don't want this episode to end on, or at least for me, is, oh, Colton hates My Girl. I think this is it's like getting to talk to you about it was so fun, because it is all about this like almost kind of like communal building up. Like, and if I think about this as like an auteur, like one guy in a room, that's where it starts to feel flat to me, because it's not much in that way. But that's also the history of pop music, right? pop music is not a.
That's what I meant when I was like, "Are you going to go the Beyonce route here?" Because like Beyonce has a team.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You
know? And the Temptations had a team.
They all did, man. So I love it, and I hope. I mean, I know. I mean, I'm in control of this.
The lyrics,
I hope we do more Motown in the future.
The lyrics for "My Girl" aren't as bad as "The Way You Do the Things You Do." Do you know that one? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, why can't I think of it though?
Smile so sweet.
There
could have been a toothbrush. Okay, that's not the lyric, but it's basically that.
Yeah, that song's good though, man. That's
anybody who knows that song.
I do know what you're talking about.
Has to appreciate that I riffed an idea that they probably considered.
The other one is like when you brought up like "I Want to Hold Your Hand." I don't like that song, man. For that same reason, that song bugs me.
I'm pretty sure you didn't want to end on a negative. But let's not.
All right.
Give me some hints.
Okay. So, see, this is one of those. This is like a big, like other names we've done. This is a big name. So I feel like anything. Okay. New Jersey.
Bruce Springsteen.
You got it.
Okay. What Bruce Springsteen song?
Courtney Cox.
I know the music video moment you're talking about, but I'm not sure what song it is. All I can think of is "Born in the USA," and I don't think it's
one. Not that one. No. Spark.
This is tough. I do know Bruce Springsteen.
If you don't, it's you're forgiven if you don't. You have the name. That was quick.
New Jersey. I was just like, all right.
I guess what other name is like almost like. Synonymous with New Jersey. I don't know. Kevin Smith? No, it's not Kevin Smith.
He is a little synonymous with New Jersey, but we're not doing movies just yet, guys.
We might maybe in the future. I don't have like a carved out top five of Bruce Springsteen, but I know this is in here. And like that's not like controversial, I think. But "Dancing in the Dark."
"Dancing in the Dark." Okay. Yeah.
Just okay.
I'm in.
I had others. Like, I think they're probably better, like Bruce, maybe, but I don't know. I'm just like, I don't think we've done a lot of Springsteen talk. I don't think either of us are like real boss heads.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, we could talk about the boss. I'm down to give it a go.
I feel like it's one of those guys where people expect me to like Bruce Springsteen more than I do, but I also don't dislike him.
His early stuff when he was being more compared to Dylan. I really, really dug. I've only listened to it a few times, but when he was a lot more of like a lyrical guy,
and right,
playing the acoustic, I was like, "Oh, this!" I didn't even know about it. I probably heard it like going into my 20s. Oh, I didn't even know this was a chapter of his life. In my head, he was always just the energy on stage
guy. Oh, he's the E Street Band,
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm interested in talking about. I don't think this is the best example of that. This song specifically, but. That is there's a kind of like New York songwriter, just like everything in the kitchen sink kind of band where it's like, you know, saxophone, da da da, and it's like him and Billy Joel, like they occupy the same sound space to me. That
I
think in my younger years, I rolled my eyes at pretty hard. I was like, this is I hate that. I hate that. There's no edge to that sound. But I think as I've gotten older, I've grown to appreciate it. There's a kind of character to it that I don't think I would ever want, but
I think it's the full committal he has to what he's doing.
It's middle like folk. Yeah, it's definitely folk. I like
but,
that.
I mean, he doesn't, he, there's no pumping the brakes. It's all gas when he's going in.
Yeah.
And maybe there should be some brakes, but we can talk about that later. But I mean, Born to Run, I think it's a killer tune. So, I mean, dancing. None of this has to do with the song that we're going to be doing.
I was going to say, and also not doing Border Road. I actually, well, I'll get into why I think the song is really great. But there we go, everybody, Dancing in the Dark. But that's not what we are talking about next episode.
Not next episode. We're going to dive into Jamiroquai. Do you remember the four albums?
No, bro. Yeah.
I'll listen to
Leo, this comes out a Friday before we record with Leo. Leo's going to hear this and go, oh no, this is a mistake. Cause you would think knowing there's another guest, like that we would like, you know, button our shirts up and that, but
nah, dude, I'm going to listen to the albums, ChatGPT some stuff and we'll be ready to go, Leo.
This actually isn't even us. This is just ChatGPT.
That's right, man.
We're an AI created podcast.
I pay $20 a month just so we can make sure this podcast comes out.
That's right. I got defensive. I was like, I pay $20 a month so this podcast comes out.
Is it up to 20 now?
I don't know what it is. Audio Boom, get your stuff together, man. Yeah, it's not. It's not 20. You would get a phone call from me if it was 20.
That's fair. Well, and now that you're starting to edit, I may have to start paying because me editing was what got me out of paying.
Hey, everybody out there, we love that you spend time listening to us. And we joked that before, but it's actually kind of wild that like the numbers that we get considering who we are, it's bananas.
It really, and when I was listening to the Coheed episode, like we at some point in that episode talk about how it's just like, we've done so many episodes. It's episode 13. We're on episode 62 today. And I'm like, I can't believe we reached 62. And it is because we actually do get support and it's really appreciated.
We wouldn't keep like recording this like if we didn't think there were actually people other than just our close family members that listen to us. And because we would just talk to each other regardless, but recording it is because it's cool, man. So we appreciate you all. Yeah,
while we don't get a whole bunch of emails, I do get a bunch of feedback from you motherfuckers. And I appreciate it.
I think it's close to zero, everybody. I'm just going to say it. I don't know if we've said it specifically.
Honestly, I'm just going to start going like, just text me at 661 because that's what happens most of the time. I just get a text going like, how could you say this about that band?
Which is sad because they should really be texting me because likely that's who they want to talk to.
Oh, they're texting me to try to get to you. So
I have insulated myself.
Friend texts me. I text Casey. She talks to you.
I am so insulated. It is.
Honestly, based off the text I get, remain insulated. You don't. Want Stay
who,
in hiding.
Who does he think he is?
All right, everybody. I'm pretty sure I hear our outro music playing right now.
Oh, is that what that is? Hmm. Oh, oh, oh.
Santa. We're almost there.
We got to go. Who is Santa? Is that Santa? Shh. No.
Oh, lucky. Hey, yo, Santa.
It's Johnny Attic. This is amazing. The main character of the 13th Step.